Welcome to episode 101 of The Music Room. This episode is all about manipulatives in the music room, and it is with my friend, Debbie O'Shea. I first met Debbie years ago at an OAKE conference, and then in 2019 was able to travel to Queensland, Australia to present at a Kode conference and spent several days with her, and she's just a lovely human being. So first I'm going to tell you a little bit about Debbie. Debbie O'Shea is an enthusiastic and experienced music educator. Her qualifications include a Master's of Music Studies, a Graduate Diploma of Music Education, a Bachelor of Education, and the Holy Names Kodai Summer Certificate, California, held in Brisbane. In 2020, Debbie earned national accreditation as a highly accomplished teacher. Debbie is passionate about supporting music educators through Crescendo Music Education. She has worked as a classroom teacher, primary music specialist, early childhood music teacher, curriculum writer, lecturer, workshop presenter, masked choir conductor, and composer. Debbie is currently a Kodai Queensland committee member and has the Kodai philosophy in the heart of her teaching. She has had the honor of working with Catholic Education, KMEIA Queensland, Musica Viva in Schools, Music Count Us In, UQ, and Griffith University. Currently, she works as a primary music specialist for the Department of Education, Queensland. Debbie lives north of Brisbane with her husband and has two children, now lovely young men. I will be linking in the show notes to Debbie's information, all of her links. She does have a podcast, and she has been on my podcast before, all about classroom management, so I will be sure to link to that. So I'm excited for you to hear the show all about manipulatives in the music room. Here's the show. I am so excited to welcome Debbie O'Shea to the show to talk all about manipulatives in the music room. How are you doing, Debbie?
I am fabulous. Thank you very much, Aileen. It is so lovely to be on your podcast.
It's lovely to see you and to talk to you. All right. So I want to start first off with just kind of a definition of how you would define manipulatives for the music room.
That's actually a really good question. And manipulatives is only a term I've been using recently. Until then, I would have used a really technical term like stuff. But it's true. I just think, oh, I will be shopping somewhere and go, look at that plastic fruit. Oh, look, I wonder, I could use that for chop, chop, chippity, chop. I could. Uh-huh. Oh, we could go shopping. We could clap the syllables. Oh, I've got to buy that plastic fruit, right?
Right, right.
So I would buy that plastic fruit. I would experiment and use it different ways, and it would sort of give me a little bit of a thrill to use something different and exciting. The kids would get excited because there's something new. And I just literally, I didn't have a name for it. I just liked using stuff. Uh-huh. And didn't think about it. But then, of course, as you learn more, do more, I'm thinking, okay, it's to do with hands-on, isn't it? Mm, it's to do with the kinesthetic learners. It's all learners, even if they're just visual and they get it when you're doing it on the board, or they're oral learners and they get it when you're singing it and talking about it. It still deepens their understanding to be able to use their hands somehow. It connects through their brain in different ways. So I guess they are manipulating things with their hands. And then when I first came across, don't ask me when that was, the word manipulatives, I thought, actually, it works, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I had better stop calling it stuff. Start calling it manipulatives. So I guess my definition of a manipulative is something that children can feel and use and demonstrate their music knowledge or experiment with their music knowledge or discover music concepts through using their hands and their body.
Yes, I think I've always been a big proponent of technology. Like, I love technology. And I love using technology for myself, and I love using technology in my music lessons. But sometimes we're just missing that hands-on aspect where students have something in their hands and they're working with it to deepen their understanding. And it's not a screen. It's something they can touch and they can feel. There can be a lot of power there and a lot of impact, you know?
Yes, I agree. And I think that they just need that as part of their learning.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so I would love to get into the nitty-gritty and talk about some of your favorite manipulatives. So what about manipulatives for rhythm? What do you like to use for that?
I really have to go with paddle pop sticks. Do you call them paddle pop sticks in America?
No, are you think is it like popsicle sticks?
I guess so. Yes, like ice blocks.
Yeah, we call them popsicles, yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
But yes, I
yeah.
think popsicle sticks. Yeah, like the brown sticks that are
Yeah,
rounded.
just rounded on the top and the bottom. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we call them paddle pop sticks. And I,
That's more
in
fun.
Australia, I guess that's because one of the most popular ice blocks that you'd buy in the on the corner shop, individually wrapped when we were growing up, the most popular ones were paddle pops. That was the
Oh,
type. Yeah. Oh, yeah. But I love rainbow paddle pops. Actually, surprise. I love
yeah, right,
rainbow
yeah.
now. Rainbow paddle pops. Banana paddle pops were a little bit divisive. People either loved them or found them too sweet. I really liked banana paddle pops. They sort of tasted like the lolly, banana lollies.
Okay.
Don't even know if you guys have banana lollies. Oh my goodness.
No. Not that I've ever had. We had like just regular like popsicles, just frozen popsicles, but also like a big staple of my childhood were push-ups. You ever heard of a push-up?
A
Like
lolly.
orange creamsicle. It was like a cylindrical orange, like a light orange, and it tasted orange, and you would push up. It was called a push-up because you would push it up and it would come up out of like the wrapper and then you would eat it.
Is it frozen?
Yes.
Oh, we had Sunny Boys and they
Okay.
were frozen orange, but they were really hard to eat. They
Okay.
were these odd sort of triangular
Oh.
things. You had to cut the top off and they were hard to get up.
Oh,
So we needed push-ups, pop-ups. What are they?
I know what you're talking about. Didn't have that name for them, but the frozen triangle thing that you smush up to get out. Yeah,
I knew we would go off track. I
was gonna
really
say we went off track, but that's okay. That was a fun diversion. Paddle pop sticks for
Yes.
like rhythms to have students.
Rhythms. I think they're great. And I use them as soon as they've got, actually, I use them from before I have Tar and TT. So leading up to teaching Tar and TT, I use them to just represent sounds, stems. So how many paddle pop sticks will we need for your name, Debbie? Okay, we'll need two paddle pop sticks. So we've got two stems. Let's clap them, and go. So right from then up to my oldest kids, they're year six, they're 11. I use them. They're particularly good if you need to. So if you've got a special needs child or someone who has difficulty writing, they might be able to express their rhythmic pattern with paddle pop sticks. But even the whole class can still use paddle pop sticks. We could use, as long as you can get some sort of dot, you can use them for compound rhythms. I did start collecting, I don't have enough yet, but I started collecting little lids like milk bottle lids or drink bottle lids. And if you have them upside down, they could be the head of a minim, because it's suggesting an outline. And I'm also experimenting with cutting, because you can't obviously do minims easily with just stems. So I am experimenting with that. I've run off some paper ones and we just that are drawn and we can put in the note heads. And I've got some time signatures run off.
Okay.
So we can hand them out. You can put in a time signature and then you can put one paddle pop stick on top of the other to be a bar line so it's longer. So I just paddle pop sticks are just really useful. I also have a little container of half paddle pop sticks so that when you make tea ticker and ticker tea, you can actually have the size looking vaguely correct.
Yes, I was just telling this story. I just presented a workshop for Naperville 203 School District, which is near Chicago, yesterday, and I was showing popsicle sticks in my presentation, talking about using them in centers. But I was telling the story about how when I first started teaching, this is way back, it's going to date me, but it's way back in 1999 when I first started teaching, I don't even know that mini popsicle sticks existed. So I took scissors and popsicle sticks and I cut each popsicle stick, which is hard to do. It like hurts your hand to do.
But that's what I do. Do you have mini popsicle sticks?
Yes, Amazon does.
If you I did not know that.
Yeah. If you look up on Amazon, mini popsicle sticks, it's, you know, it saves your hand.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I love the like flexibility of popsicle sticks. Like you said, there's so much. I never thought to add time signatures to it. That's a great idea. But yeah, like adding a dot, like some kind of chip or a circle for dotted rhythms. And I feel like I've heard of people adding like yarn to the bag for ties. Yes. I mean, there's ties. Just so much you can do.
I'm going to write down, I'll send you my document I've made ready to print with all the time signatures on it.
Oh, that would be great.
Actually, that would be quite handy to add for my membership, wouldn't it? Ah, there's a whole lot I'd like to get up there. Time signatures sheet. So I just done up a sheet with nice big time signatures. There's a page of 2-4. There's a page of 3-4, et cetera, right. So that you can just go print page one yes, 4 times and you've got enough.
Yeah. Yeah, love it.
I'll send that to you.
Thank you. All right, what about your favorite melodic manipulatives?
Well, almost anything can be good for beginning and that preparation sort of step for contour, I think. But I have to go back, although I talk about this a lot. I've even got a whole podcast episode on it if people want to find that. I don't know what number it is, but it's one of my early ones, I think. But felt, staves and counters. It's got to be my favorite because it's so quick. It's so easy. And I use it all the way up. When we first teach about the staff, for me in grade one, we have this great game where they get the felt staff and they get just one counter. Mm-hmm. And we play games. We're going to put the counter on the first line. Those young years are so important. I'm going to digress for a minute. Surprise. Okay. If we lay these foundations, it pays off for the whole rest of their life. Like basically, if they don't understand the first line on the staff is the bottom line, right, then they're going to get mixed up in all sorts of ways, aren't they? They've also got to learn that the higher up the staff, the higher the note. We can't take those basic understandings we have for granted. They've actually got to be taught. So I like the felt staves, one counter, and we have a little game and they've got to have their hands on their head to start. And I say something like second space, and they put their counter on the second space and the hands back on head. And then the first, I look around and go first, second, third, and then I check because they might have their hands on first, but not be right. And then, so they're all desperate to win. Mind you, nothing happens if they win. You right. know, I just go, oh, you were first and you're right. Yay. Okay, another one. Ready? Off we go. So we're just practicing staff position. Mm-hmm. Where's the fifth line? Where's the fourth line? And it just gives them practice of that. So right from then up to compose a pentatonic melody starting on the first space and play it on one of the tuned percussion instruments. Go. Oh, add rhythm with the matchsticks. Mm-hmm. They're the perfect size matchsticks for the staff. And I've even got a bag with the right length of black wool. And if I want that takes a while, I can say, make a treble clef.
Oh, wow.
That takes them a little while to make a treble clef with wool on the felt staff. Yeah.
Right.
But they really love doing that, of course. So, like, I love my felt staves and counters. So, for a composition, dictation, grade four, grade three or four, you can, if that's when I do recorder in year three and four, it's just my choice. They could even just use note heads, say, pretend there's a treble clef or build one, like I said. And give them a limited range of notes that they can play on the recorder. Build yourself a little melody. Now try and play it. Mm-hmm. Can you play the melody your neighbor wrote? Let's have a little walk around the room, see if you can play other people's melodies.
Yeah.
So I find they're very useful for pitch.
Yes, for sure. Love all those ideas. So we talked about rhythm. We talked about melody. What about just for manipulatives or other types of concepts that aren't necessarily rhythm or melodic?
Well, I love so much. I love my puppets. I love my soft toys, my cuddly toys. I will say at this point, I have to confess that I don't use them as much as I want to. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I'll get to that in a minute. my favorite types for other concepts. I think I have to go with handballs. I think handballs have been my most recent discovery. They've been amazing, especially with my older students.
Okay. What is a handball?
Okay. A handball is something that our students are obsessed with here.
Okay.
And I'm speaking for my kids at my school. I don't know if it's something that's right across Australia, but I think it's pretty big in Queensland. It's a high bounce ball, the size of a tennis ball.
Okay.
And the kids play all lunch break with them.
Okay.
And they play on painted squares on the concrete, or they make it up with cracks in the concrete. They'll just find themselves a handball court and they just bounce it to each other with their hands. It's got to bounce on your side and their side. There's no net. It's just so, and they just play handball, and then they've got all these rules, roles, and I can basically play it, but not when they get all flash with their rules.
Right.
You know, I really don't know what you're doing there. And they are quite obsessed with it. So if you can bring something from their playground into your music room. Yeah. So they've been, and I use that, well, I will confess my number one aim is engagement for those older children, because the ones that are obsessed with handball are not often the ones that are obsessed with learning nicely in the music lesson.
Right.
I'm not saying they're exclusive, but sometimes there's, so.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's worked really well for me. And I think that they're great for use for other things like form and structure of a piece. So
are you having the students like listen to a piece of music and bounce it a certain way during like the A part, and then bounce it in a different formation or a different way for B, or what does that look like with a handball?
Something like that. Yes.
Okay.
So the way I do it is I start with basically a routine that I've made up. And the routine usually reflects the form. Like, we might not even talk about it. We're just listening to this piece of music and doing the handballs. Or more commonly, we're actually singing a song and we're doing handballs to that song. In fact, I have a brand new freebie that is handballs.
Okay.
So like people can actually get on there and download it. And it's an example of what I'm talking about. So it's a song that I want to put in my program that I don't often actually put in because it's really useful, but I don't really know what to do with it because it's a song that it is an old fashioned song, but so good for compound. But I don't know if the kids, I don't know what to do with it. Do you know?
Right. Like it's, there's not necessarily a game or.
There's not a game. Yes, I could make up a game. It could be, and I thought, I don't know what to do with it. So I thought, I know, I'll do a handball routine. So I filmed myself doing the routine. So you get, when you download the PDF, get the freebie, there's a link and you can watch me do the handball routine. So
I should
have said in the notes, you don't have to necessarily show this to your children, please. This is like, this is for you to learn it. And then
I can put that in the show notes. That's really cool. Years ago at a Code workshop here in Columbus, I learned like a tennis ball routine. I think that is similar to what you're talking about with a song by Lorena McKennett. I want to say, I'm going to have to look up what the title of the song was, but it was like I want to say it was in 6 meter or something like 6'4". And we would do like a bounce, catch, tap, 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 or something like that. Like, you know, to kind of go with the meter, and then you'd bounce to somebody else and they would do the routine and then they bounce to someone else, and you have this whole like star formation of who you're, one bounces to four bounces to six bounces to two, something like that. You know what I mean? Like you're kind of like bouncing.
Wow.
And I never thought about that. First of all, I've done it with students and it was really fun and engaging, but I never really thought of that as being a manipulative. But if you're thinking in terms of it's hands-on, it's something they're touching, and it's extending their musical understanding, that is a manipulative. You know,
it is by my definition of stuff, isn't it?
But also it is, it's improving their, it's kinesthetic, it's improving their musical understanding, especially if you're doing something like that with meter, right?
Yes.
Where they're learning a song through the handball, you know, I love it.
And I used to use just tennis balls. The problem I had was I just because I bought it out of my own money. They were just cheap ones and they didn't bounce very well because you've got to get good tennis balls. These are just so good at bouncing. In fact, you have to say, my room is quite a low ceiling where I am now. So I was like, please, let's not the ceiling and the fans. If they're going. So I used to just use tennis balls and they would just come out for meter. That's it, really. Bounce. So we're learning 3 meter. We would sing or listen to a 3 meter song and we would bounce on the strong beat.
Right.
Bounce and hold it. Bounce or bounce, pass, bounce, hand to hand, bounce, you know, like you were talking about, but much simpler. I do like what you were talking about. That sounds fabulous. So you do all of those sort of things. Yes, in a circle, they can create their own by themselves or in groups.
Yeah,
create your own handball routine. There you go. And they can pass to each other or do something.
And then you have
themselves.
That relevance piece. It's something that they really like from their life and they're connecting it to music.
Yes, because I do find, I do find it quite difficult to, you've got to be so careful getting songs from their real life and bringing it in. Like someone mentioned Taylor Swift in one of my lessons. Oh, they were probably grade 4, something like that, sort of middle of the school, slightly older. And someone mentioned something, not as in let's do this song or whatever. And this group within my class went, oh, no, not Taylor Swift. You know, like although most kids are obsessed, there's always those kids that are the antithesis of that, you know? Yes. And I'm thinking, well, if I bring in, let's sing a Taylor Swift song, I'm going to really alienate some of those kids. They have such strong opinions about their pop culture stuff.
Yeah, you're going to have some kids that will absolutely love it. Like my youngest daughter is super into Taylor Swift right now. So I've actually been listening to more Taylor Swift because of her. And you'll get some kids that will love it. But like you, I thought about that. But some kids, I think there are a decent number of Taylor Swift songs that are school appropriate.
Yes.
But then you'll have students who absolutely hate it. So yeah, finding that like piece of their life, like a some kind of connection, real life connection, that isn't going to be to create a controversy, I think is great.
Yes. And that's the way I see handballs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Love it. So when do you like to use manipulatives? Like how often in your lessons or what kind of lesson, that kind of thing?
Well, not as much as I want because I walk in and go, I have all this great stuff and I just don't use it enough. So I am trying very hard and I'll have to refer back to another one of my podcast episodes on batching. I'll have to try and sort of tell you the episode numbers of those. Hold on. So I've got the batching and the staves. Actually, I've got one on paddle pop sticks too. Okay.
Oh, okay, cool.
I'll send you those episode numbers if people want to. Yeah. But if they want to look it up themselves, it's the Crescendo Music Education podcast. So there's those three relevant. So what I'm trying to do is apply those principles of batching that I learned from listening to business podcasts. So I look at flashcards because to me, flashcards can be a manipulative, you know, we're using them, they can reorder them, whatever. So if I pick something like flashcards, I will think I'm going to try to use them this week across the board.
Okay.
So I just pop it into my lesson planning, obviously not the same set of flashcards in this case, but I get out my container with all of the flashcards in it and we go, okay, we're using the T-ticket flashcards and we'll do a similar sort of activity with the flashcards across the lessons that week. So that way, because I also sometimes lose track, what have I done with who?
Right.
Oh, I used the handballs last week. Oh, no, that was grade 6. I haven't done them with grade 5. I need to, and it's not vital to their learning. It's not like, oh, I forgot to teach them ticker ticker, right? No, right. I forgot to use the handballs. It's nowhere near as earth shattering, but it makes it easier for me because I go, right, we're using the staves and counters. So I've got them out and it's making it easier. Especially if you've got a timetable, my timetable's not terribly friendly. I'll have a grade 4, then a grade 5, then a grade 1. Like not all the time, they're chunked as they can be. But if I, it helps me a little bit.
Right.
The more friction I can take away in my working day, the better it is for me. So I sort of batch my manipulatives. Even sometimes write it down. I go week one, I've got a little tab in my OneNote, which is where I do my planning. OneNote is magic, by the way, since I've switched to OneNote for planning. And I've got a tab that's just got masters and templates or something. And there's just a page and it goes week 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And I just write in there what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
It might not always work, or if an assessments and stuff might take longer and I don't do it, but at least I'm trying to get in that mixture. Like soft toys, we're going to use Teddy's soft toys all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll even try and include them for grade 4, 5, and 6 if I can, because mm-hmm. I've had them. This is my 8th year at this school. I even have the older kids go, when are we going to go to the galaxy of toys? Because I call it the galaxy of toys.
So cute.
And we go there when the portal opens to the galaxy of toys. So, and I say to them, when we're using the toys, we might use them even for a couple of weeks if they're really relevant. And I'll say, if you sing this really well, the portal to the galaxy of toys will open. I get so excited. So I try to batch, you know, across the year levels to make sure that I do a variety. Does that make sense?
I think it totally makes sense. And it not only has the benefits that you talked about, like just making sure like you're getting to it because you're putting it into all the lessons that week, but I bet it makes your teaching more seamless too. Because in order to use something like, let's say we're talking about felt staves, in order to use felt staves, there's a certain process. Like first you need to pull out this, then you need to get this, then you're going to get the counter, right? So you have this process that you use anytime you get that manipulative out. And because you're doing it with every single lesson, you're going to get that process down to a science, right?
Yes, it helps.
So remember all those steps of first you do this, then you do this, and don't forget about this, and make sure you don't do this, like all those things that, you know, you say to kids as they're using something, all those little reminders will be right, you know, at the forefront of your memory because you're using them so often.
And it does save so much time, and our lessons are so short. Mm-hmm. So I try to do that. I'm not saying I always succeed, but that's where I'm aiming. Scarves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, scarves, one of my favorites. And I think, well, if I'm, you know, I'm going to get the scarves out. Let's see. I haven't done scarves for ages. Let's get in there. Let's do it. What can I do? My preps will do free movement. I'll put on a little piece of fast music, and then I'll do a little piece of slow music, and we'll talk about the difference between fast and slow, and they can show me the music with their scarf. That's what I like to tell them. Show me the music with your scarf. Then we might do a more formal routine with Move It. With mm-hmm. my grade ones, I love using John Feyerabend's movement, doing their things and put scarves in their hands. So yeah, batching is basically what I'm trying to do so that I use my manipulatives in a more meaningful and effective way.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it also makes lesson planning in general easier because, you know, for this batch of lesson plans, I'm using this mm-hmm. manipulative for this chunk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love it. All right. So what about manipulative storage? What is your favorite type of or favorite way to store your manipulatives?
My favorite way is stick it in a tub.
Yeah.
No, seriously, I've got some things, little cards that I use. In fact, I've actually just started trying to find them, right? I've got these little cards I made years ago. They're sequenced. There's the So Me ones pack. There's pack with So Me La. They're individual, ready to give to the kids. And they're just little squares of colored paper with S and M written on them. My idea is I use them with paddle pop sticks.
Okay.
So we do the rhythm and then we put the little solfa underneath. Yay, stick notation.
Yeah, love the combination of rhythm and melody.
Like fabulous. Hey, I can tell you, I think I used them once. I then lost them because they're all in individual Ziploc bags somewhere. And then I haven't quite finished making the upper level ones. So they're somewhere else. And I literally haven't used them since I first made them.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to. So mm-hmm. I'm actually having a little bit of a search and a sort through stuff. The ones I use all the time are the most simply stored and put away, which is just literally in a tub, in a set of drawers. I have tubs that slide in and out of like a bookshelf. They're very expensive flash storage things that were purchased, especially for my room, worth every cent. I would go without buying anything in the music room for years if just to get these things. So, and they're brightly colored tubs, and I label them, pull out the tub, and the kids are really good now. They know my expectations. They just come, file past, grab a handful, go sit down and use it, or grab a staff, go use it. And right. I've got different colored felt staves, and I say, you cannot be fussy. Just get the top staff.
Right.
I don't care if you want a yellow one and there's a red one on the top. Just pick one up, go. So they know my expectations.
You get what you get, and you don't throw
and
it.
And you don't get upset. Yeah, what do you say?
We say you get what you get and you don't throw a fit, but you say your rhymes better. You get what you get.
You get what you get and you don't get upset.
I like that better.
And the other one I say is, you're going to get one. It might not be your color. This is with my little ones. I make them put their hand on their heart and they go, I promise I won't get upsetty spaghetti.
That's cute.
And then they fall about laughing. And if someone is looking like they get upset, we all do this. I promise I won't get upset.
Right.
And the other one that I do now that I got from Deb Bryden, see, I did not get through a podcast without mentioning Deb. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, love you, Deb. I got this one from Deb, but I added a little bit to it. We shrug. If you don't get a turn, because that's a big one, not getting a turn with little kids. We put our arms out, we shrug, and we go, oh, well, maybe next time. Whole class does it. And it really helps because it reminds them there's other people in the same boat.
Yes. And it verbalizes that.
And it verbalizes.
Frustration. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
All right. So you have a course that is all about manipulatives in the music room. Can you tell us about it?
I do. And I'm excited. Okay, so the course is going to run in April. It's four modules and they will drop. Sorry, I'm looking over this way because there's my calendar. The 6th, the 13th, the 20th and the 27th of April. So there will be one module drop each week. So on that Saturday for us and 10th of March, the CART opens.
Okay.
And CART closes on the 2nd of April. Basically, in these four modules, I have these two amazing educators with me. So it's me presenting some, Deb Bryden and Alison McLeod, two very clever, wonderful ladies. So the three of us are going to present a few. Hold on, let me see. Here's the handout. One, two, three, four, five. About six activities in each module. So we explain what we're doing, why we're doing it, how we're doing it, then we do it. So it's all on video. So for each of those, and for each of those activities, there's a handout. So that handout, believe me, is thorough, is detailed, and quite parody, can I say? It's quite parody. So they get the PDF that goes with that. So they've got the video they can watch forever. You know, you don't have to do it at that time. Once you purchase, you can pop in and watch anytime. Download the PDF, of course, but then they can go back and watch the video anytime, which I think is very useful because you might think, oh, I forgot how to do that. I'll just go back and see what Debbie did in that or what, you know, what did Alison say to do around that? So that's sort of the idea. And we've tried to use a range of manipulatives. It's not exhaustive. Oh, believe me, it's not exhaustive, but there's a range of manipulatives, a range of year levels, but it's all primary. Well, for elementary, like sort of 4 to 11-year-olds we're shooting for.
Okay. I'm excited to see what all is in the course, and I can definitely link to that in the show notes. So for those of you listening, if you go to aileensmusicroom.com/podcast and you find this podcast episode, then I will link to all of the wonderful things that Debbie has talked about. All right. Super excited about that. Just love this conversation about manipulatives. So many great ideas. Thank you so much, Debbie.
My absolute pleasure. I love talking about all the stuff.
Yes. Stuff. Love the stuff. Do you want to talk about what we're consuming?
Oh, I would love to.
In my new position, I'm part of a curriculum team, and we are doing a book study. This is our second book study of the year, I think. So for this book study, we're meeting like every Monday morning. We'll talk about a couple chapters from the book. And the book that we're studying is called Never Enough: When Achievement Culture Becomes Toxic and What We Can Do About It by Jennifer Braheny Wallace. And Debbie, I don't know if this is an issue or a concern in Australia, but here in the States, it is very common, especially with students whose parents are financially stable and affluent, to have a lot of pressure for what college they're going to go to and have them involved in a lot of different activities to make their resumes look as good as they can. And it becomes really competitive and cutthroat and like really focused on what are you doing to stand out, right? So there is like all of this pressure on the kid to achieve. And then the studies are showing that these students actually are more depressed and anxious than students in much lower socioeconomic situations. So you think of these students who are in these affluent homes, well, they should have nothing to be sad about, right? But actually that's not true at all. They're actually really depressed and anxious statistically compared to their peers who are not as affluent because of all that pressure. So it's really interesting to hear about, but also she offers some solutions and some thoughts about how to make it better. So is that something that you see in Australia students struggling with?
I think so. I think that's something that's faced more with in the secondary world, in our high schools.
Yes.
And I'm very much, I try to not be insular, but, you know, by its nature, my job is very much centered in my little world and
right.
helping teachers that are in a world like mine. But I can certainly see it, absolutely. And yeah. Even with little kids, the pressure to, you've got to be on the, you know, well, you've got to go do your swimming lessons. Actually,
right.
You should, because you need to be safe. Okay, so I'm not saying don't do swimming, right?
Right.
But they're going to swimming lessons, they're going to chess club, and they should
yes.
go to this, and they should be part of that. And right. You just want, kids also just need to be kids.
Yeah, they just need to play. Yeah, and as a parent, so it's also interesting to listen to as a parent, just to see like, what could yes. I do better? Or am I putting too much pressure?
Mm-hmm.
On my kids. I do have one kid who's already in college and then one who's in fifth grade. So yeah, what does our schedule look like? Is her schedule too busy? Does she have time to just decompress and play instead of like she's in dance class and she's got two nights of dance a week? So trying to find that balance, you know? Yeah.
And you want to give them everything and you want
right,
to help
yeah.
them. Like I can understand where it all comes from. So I can't actually tell you how much of a problem it is here, but I'm fairly sure it is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And absolutely. And I think you'd find it, definitely be finding it in our elite private schools. Definitely.
Right.
And I imagine it's rife in high schools as well. But even in primary schools, I think we just need to just play is the answer. Just let kids be kids, you know, and to come back even to manipulatives. It's one of the reasons why I like to use it.
Yeah.
Because they feel like they're playing.
Yes, that's a good connection. Yeah, for sure. Just letting them be kids and letting them explore. What about you? What have you been consuming?
Well, I'm going to go podcasts and I'm going to go not music podcasts because I think most of your listeners are probably over the best music podcasts to listen to.
Uh-huh.
And if they do not listen to the Crescendo Music Education podcast, get in there and find me. I interview amazing people.
Uh-huh.
Aileen Miracle, for one.
Thank you.
I think you were like episode 3 or something.
Yeah, it was pretty early on, I think.
Yeah, it was. So they should, all your listeners should get in and listen to your episode.
Mm-hmm.
So we should aim for that. Let's aim to make Aileen's episode the most listened to. I'll check the stats.
Okay.
Oh, can I say there's a long, long way to go. My listens are increasing. It's lovely.
Uh-huh.
Thank you to the beautiful people out there who are listening to me and my ravings and all of the wonderful guests that I have. But when I had Tyler Swick on, he's one of his episodes, I had to chop it up into three, has so many listens. I don't know what he did.
Oh,
but
wow.
It's just, whoa. That's my most popular episode ever.
Oh,
is
wow.
one
Listen.
Of the three parts of Tyler Swick. So there we go. Yeah, but I'm going to just recommend two that aren't music education. Think Fast, Talk Smart with Matt Abrahams, and Quick Brain with Jim Quick.
Okay.
They are...
This is my dog on the screen right now that my listeners can't see, but Debbie can.
Oh, how beautiful. What's his name?
This is Sherlock. He got a haircut, so he looks like a little gremlin right now. But
oh, he is gorgeous.
And he's kind of making noise as he's walking around on the bed. So I apologize to anyone listening to that.
Well, and funny, my dog is now waiting for me to walk her. Because during our talk time now is normally when I take her for a walk. So she will be out there beside herself. So when we finish this, I'm going to take my dog for a walk.
I love it.
So there we go.
All right. So Think Fast, Talk Smart. What is that? What is the premise of that one?
Okay. He is, I'm going to get it wrong. I think it's Stanford University. I'm going to say something wrong. He's from a university in the States. Okay. And I should know because he talks about it all the time. And he's just talking about communication skills.
Okay.
And he speaks so well. It's so logical. You just get so much from it. As a teacher, as a professional development provider, you know, someone who works with other adults, I just listened to one he did on questions and the importance of using questions and how to use questions. It's that sort of thing.
Applicable to education, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I just really like that he gets great guests. So that, I mean, the title says it really, Think Fast, Talk Smart, and the power of the pause. And, you know, so it's all about good communication. I love that. And Jim Quick has an interesting story. I read his book. Actually, I listened on Audible, but, you know, read the book. So he had a severe brain injury when he was a child, and literally I think he fell off a chair or something in kindy or whatever. And so he went through school being called the boy with the broken brain.
Oh.
Yeah, he was quite brain, his brain was literally quite damaged. So he has worked on how to develop your brain and in different ways. And he's a big believer of neuroplasticity, and he does amazing things now. Amazing. And you can do courses with him on I'm actually working vaguely on increasing my reading speed. He does how to read faster, because I'm an incredibly slow reader, which is one of the reasons I love audiobooks. He does things like that. Memory. He has a big online presence with courses and stuff. But listening to that podcast would be a really good place to start to connect with him. So Jim Quick, very interesting character and story, and great podcast. Quick Brain.
That's great. Love it. Thank you for the suggestions. It was so fun having you on the show, Debbie. Thank you so much.
I loved it. Thank you.
All right. And I hope everyone checks out the show notes and all those helpful links. So thanks again. Have a great day.
Thanks.